Wow, thank you so much. I was in this room a few years ago as the sort of the person who came at the very end of the morning and maybe opened the doorway for us to consider what our step would be, where we were in our personal walk with Jesus. And then to come back today, it's a little bit of pressure because when I met with the leaders of this amazing gathering a few months ago, and as I've been talking to Bob Day regularly in the process of getting here, I learned that I was the first pastor that's ever been invited to the real estate prayer breakfast to speak. And that's a lot of pressure right there. I might be the first and the last, and that is a big burden. But I want to say thank you for inviting me to be a part again today. I love this city. I'm an older guy and was born here in Atlanta in 1958. It was what was at the time Georgia Baptist Hospital. It's now Atlanta Medical. And I love Atlanta. In fact, I think anybody with any sense of acumen about business, spiritual, church climate has quickly understood that in the last decade and a half, Atlanta has become a hinge for a lot of what is happening in the entire world. And I really believe our future in this city is bright. And I love everything about Atlanta. And I just wanted to say to you today, just off to the side before I start into my remarks, how much I appreciate you and what you do. I'm a new homeowner, and so I've just recently again been through that process of construction loan and selling a house and buying a house and designing a house and having a build out of a process, and you really begin to appreciate what happens in all the inner workings of that process. And I just wanted to say to you, even at the very beginning today, that I hope that other pastors in the city feel the same way that I do, that you are literally building this city. We all together have the opportunity to decide what kind of people we're going to be, but you are going to decide literally what kind of city we look like. And for someone like me who cares a lot about that, I just want to say, may God's speed be with you. And I pray wisdom, favor, and the power of God on everything you do, because it's not just about our success or a paycheck at the end of the day. It really is about the future of an entire city, which I believe will be one of the great cities of the world, and already is one of the most strategic places on earth. So thank you for having me today. I love being here, and I, as McKittrick did earlier, I just trusting God today because I know the stakes are high, and it's not enough for me to come and do a little message this morning and kind of see how people evaluate, you know, what a pastor looks like in a setting like this. But I just really want to speak to you today as a person, as a normal person who struggles a lot in life, but who has found over the course of my whole life that Jesus is enough for me. We've been living in Alpharetta for a while now, my wife Shelley and myself, and we found this building in Lindbergh, which was a miracle. Bob and some other people that we met when we had this idea to plant Passion City Church started looking for a place to meet. Our first public gathering was at the Tabernacle downtown. I don't know if you know this venue or not, but we met there on a February Sunday night. We had two gatherings there back to back, and I think maybe about 3,500 people showed up for day one. And so we were like, what are we going to do? We have no money, we have no staff, we're a brand new church, and we got people who want to show up. So what do? So we were homeless for a few years, and we bounced between the Cobb Galleria, Cobb Energy Center, Tabernacle, GAC, and occasionally would do Good Friday events at Verizon Wireless, but we didn't have a home, and we really wanted a place to call home. And we started driving around the city with some real estate guys in Atlanta who knew everything about everything. I was blown away by these guys, Bob being one of them. because we would pull up to a property and they would say, yes, this property was built in 1987 and so-and-so and so-and-so bought it in 1995 for $285,000. And then in 1992, such and such came in and they joined a partnership with so-and-so and they bought it and redeveloped it and XYZ amount of money. And I mean, it didn't matter where we stopped the van or the car. They knew everything about that piece of property, everything about that building, everything about the lease, everything about the owners, everything about it. I was blown away at the level of knowledge that you people have about the city. And we're looking at pieces of land and other opportunities. And we finally, by the grace of God, found a building with a chain link fence around it, graffiti on the building. This place was a terrible retail location. It started out as a Costco, that went out of business. It became a Home Depot Expo, that went out of business. Before Home Depot Expos went out of business, this one went out of business. Then it became a PGA Superstore in Buckhead. You're thinking, that's a gold mine, right? And then that went out of business. And so what we discovered was Garson Drive is not a good retail location. And the day that we first pulled up, there was a 120,000 square foot building there, serving no purpose on 17 acres of land that had been bought by some guys at exactly the wrong time. I think they closed on it about 2 months before the entire global economy melted down. These out-of-state developers had paid a lot of money for this property. Some of you probably know exactly how much they paid. I'm guessing you could tell me all about that. And they were going to build a 22-story condominium on this property with that unbelievable view of downtown. We have such a great vantage point on the skyline that not many people enjoy because there isn't a 22-story condo on our property. And all of that sort of went down the tubes. Chain link fence went up. For sale sign went out. But all along, God knew that a little band of people who had a heart for planting a church in this city needed a home. And the reason I say that today is not to let you know where Passion City Church meets, but to amplify the broader idea that God is in the cracks and crevices of our lives, that God is in the details of our lives. We loved this place. I'll tell you briefly why. Because we wanted to be a church for the city. We did not want to be a suburban, neighborhood-oriented church. We wanted to be an Atlanta church. And that's why we had loved meeting downtown and at the Galleria and at Cobb Energy and up 85 at GAC. We wanted to be a city church. And when we found this chain-link fenced building, we knew this is going to be our place. We are in a 50-50 is what we call it, because man, you can take a left and a left out of our place, and in 10 minutes, you can be at Chris's house. And I don't know what Chris's house looks like, but if you pass his house a little bit, you're at, you know, High Cotton. If you just take a left out of our place, you end up at Peachtree and Piedmont. They say that's the epicenter of the population of Atlanta in 2020. If you take us straight out of our place, you're in what didn't get redeveloped when the Lindbergh development stalled in the economic downturn, and you find apartment complexes that are filled with guys, most of whom are standing on a sidewalk this morning hoping to get a day job. And you take a right out of our place before you get to the uptown of Piedmont Park and Virginia Highlands and all the hoop-to-do of Midtown. You pass by 23 adult businesses that you're trying to explain to the kids in the car, what's that? What's that? What's that? And right in the middle of all that seems like a great place for God to land. Because God's no respecter of people, right? He likes rich people as much as he likes poor people. He likes young urban professionals as much as he likes the staid families of our city. And he cares about people who are at all stages of life, even one named Rachel, whom we met one Friday night with a team of people, if you can imagine, who go to these businesses and ask if there's anything they can do to help the young ladies who work there. I thought that was an interesting ministry strategy, didn't you? Until we discovered that the business owners really do want the young ladies who work there to be looked after, because that's good for them and for their business. And so many of them say, come on in. You want to pray with the girls? Come on in. You have Christmas presents for them and their children? Come on in. You've got a Valentine's gift basket for the girls today? Come on in. And in the process of one of the coming ins, our team in the break room, not in the club, ended up meeting this girl who said, I'm not going in the break room tonight because those church people are in there. And I hate the people from the church. And she had determined that day that she would spend every break period standing in the hallway, the little narrow dark corridor between the club and the break room, because I'm not talking to these ladies. We found out later that her life was in such pain that on that day to work, she had already determined, today I'm going to take my life. She said, all the way driving from my house into the Lemberg area, I tried to get up the courage to drive my car off the road and to take my life, but I couldn't do it. She said, I was so mad by the time I got to work because I didn't want to be alive, much less be at that place. Her life was literally hell. And now she's in a little narrow corridor saying, I'm not going in there, I'm not going in there, I'm not going in there. The church ladies are in there, I'm not going in there. Until they get out of our break room, I'm not going in there, I'm not going in there. And she got so mad that finally she said, I'm going in there. Have you ever had that shift in life, you know, like, I'm not going to church, I'm not talking to that pastor, I'm going to that church and I'm talking to that pastor, you know. And she kind of got to that breaking point. She went through the door, went straight to the first lady, and she said, are you one of the ladies from the church? And she said, yes, I am. She said, well, I want to tell you about my life. And she started unpacking the reality of her life. And when she got to the end, she said, so there, what do you think about that? You know, her point of view, in my mind, was a legitimate point of view, because we all struggle, as we've already heard, with the realities of life. And how do you add up that there is a great God, an amazing Father, a loving God of all power and beauty, who has to now merge into a very broken life where things go wrong every single day, where stuff doesn't add up, and where honestly you could bring 100 pastors in here and none of them could give you a sufficient why for some of the things that we face in life? And she just looked at this lady and said, so there, that's my story. And just by the power of God, this woman said to her, I'm so, so sorry. That's what you've lived through. I'm so sorry. And somehow that answer broke, bless you, her heart. That night, she left that club and she said, I don't want this life. That night, she went to a shelter because she couldn't go home. And the next day, she woke up and did what very few people do in that shelter. She said, I'm going to stay. She stayed in a 2-week program. In that program, somebody told her about the power of Jesus. And she opened her heart and said, I need God in my life. She got baptized in an old Home Depot Expo, which now is a light on a hill, and entered into a 9-month program to try to rebuild her life and reorder things to get her son back. And when she graduated, she moved to Birmingham because she needed a new scene and a new city and a new lease on life. And I saw her a few months ago, as radiant and as happy as ever. She has enough work under her belt to qualify for all the requirements to getting her son back into her care. And she's helping young girls in another city who are struggling down dark roads find a path that could lead them to hope in life. And that all happened because a real estate development group out of state lost their shirts. At 515 Garson Drive. So God bless them. God is in the details. And he puts us where we are, when we are, for a reason. So we started working on this little townhouse. Pretty simple project. It was already there. We were just going to build it out from a shell. And the guy who sold me the townhouse, who may be in the room right now, amazing guy, he probably snuck into the commercial side of this deal. He's more in the residential, but if I mentioned his name, you'd be like, yeah, he's probably here. Amazing guy. Sold us this place. He also introduced me to an architect. My wife and I started working with this architect, and about 2 months into the process, the architect just disappeared. And that's probably never happened to you in a business deal of any kind, but you know, you're kind of invested in something, then all of a sudden somebody just goes away and you just don't hear. You know, you hear third party, you know, they're not in the deal anymore. And I'm like, I heard through my builder that our architect is no longer. And I'm like, what do you mean he's no longer? And that's tricky when you're a pastor, you know, because you have to respond pastorally, you know. You're like, oh, God bless them, you know, that's amazing. You know, that's phenomenal, so exciting for you. We'll pray for you, you know, and down deep you're like, how much did we lose? How much did we invest in this thing? What do you mean he's gone? You can't be gone. You know, we'll sue you. You know, this is it, your flesh, you know, and you're, oh, God, that's fine. The Lord's in charge of everything. God is on his throne. It'll be fine. And I don't get it right a lot, but, you know, people find out pretty quickly what you do. And this guy obviously has been like, what do you do? I'm a pastor. He's like, you're a pastor? I don't normally have a suit on. That's part of the thing that throws people off. And but I do own a suit. That's the good thing about today. Some of you are just, that's all it took for you. You're like, God, the guy owns a suit. I feel better. That's good. Life's okay. The reason why he disappeared is because his mom was diagnosed with cancer. I found this out after the fact. And I knew because of our conversations, just like some of you know with some of your friends in business, that this guy didn't have any anchors. This guy was free-floating. But he didn't see this coming on the radar. And I knew he didn't have church, he didn't have a pastor, he didn't have any people really that were going to be able to come around him and say, you know, you're going to need support in every way, but you're also going to need spiritual support. And so I reached out to him and I took a chance. Because, you know, why not? He bailed on me and I figured I could take a chance. And I emailed him out of the blue and I said, you know, we don't really have this kind of relationship, but I heard about your mom and I just wanted to encourage you. And I felt like God wanted me just to send him a psalm, just a prayer out of scripture to encourage him. I got a very short thank you. And God just put him on my heart, and I just started praying for him and just trying to stay connected to him. And then over time, I reached back out to him, and you know, it was kind of that thing that you get in with people that you haven't reached out as much as you wanted to, and now I don't know how to write the email. Is your mom still alive? Has she passed away? I don't really even know how to ask how. So I just said, how are things? And he said, well, my mom passed away. I was able to be with her. When she died, it was one of the great privileges of my life. Thank you for asking. And I just, simple reply, I just want you to know, sorry, I've been there. It's a tough road. I'm praying for you. God cares about you. I didn't talk to Chip for a year, hear from him for a year. And one day I was at our townhouse, which was still being built out, which is a whole nother story. Want me to get in the flesh, I'll talk about that. If you want to see a pastor melt down, I can talk about it now. And my builder says, it's interesting, your former architect was here a few days ago. I was like, really? Like here in my house? That he didn't finish the job on here? He's like, yeah, he just wanted to see how things had turned out. I was like, awesome. How'd that go? He said, it went really good. He said he's been coming to your church. Man, imagine that. I was like, adding it all up. I was like, I didn't know he'd been out there. I've been up here teaching and I didn't know he was out there. I wish I'd known he's out there. So 2 weeks later, I'm at my house again with my builder, and guess who comes down from the second story down to the first story? My architect in my house, like rolling around. Hey, how you doing? And I don't know if he knows that I know that he's been coming to church, so I just playing it like I don't know anything, because that's what pastors do, you know? We don't tell people half of what we know about their lives, because that makes people uneasy, so I'm like, hey, how are you doing? He goes, I'm doing great. I said, well, I haven't seen you in a long time. He goes, I see you every Sunday. And then I'm like, we're golden. I said, I heard. That's amazing. This is incredible. What happened? He said, when my mom died, short version of this story, and Chip would be fine with me telling you this because he's told a lot of the people of our church. He said, when my mom died, I went in a hole. And he said, and it was, I didn't know how to get out of it. And after many, many months of being in that hole, I said, I've got to get out of this hole. And I just cried out. I said, God, you got to help me get out of this hole. And he said, I got to go to church. He goes, I don't know where to go to church. So I just went to this church nearby. He goes, I don't know about that church. And I went to another church, and then I didn't know about that church. And then I thought, Louis's got a church. It's not my church, by the way, but that's what he thought. And he said, I'm going to go there. He said, and I went there, and he said, here's my builder, who's like some of you who've been invited here today, and you're like, I don't really even know what I've been invited to. I'm kind of understand that there's some Christians, and apparently there's a whole lot more than I thought there were, and a few people in here that I didn't think were, and apparently they are, and that's weird. And, you know, that's... So here's my builder, and here's my former architect, and here's me, and he says to me, he goes, I've been coming, and he goes, it has saved my life. And then he just starts talking about how God has been speaking to him, how God's been meeting him, how God's been opening scripture to him, how things have been making sense to him in detail. And he says, God's just changed my life. God's just changed my life. God's just changed my life. And I thought to myself again, God, you are in the cracks and crevices of life. So there is no such thing as just chasing the deal. Because in every deal are people, and wherever there are people, God is working. And so there's two ways to live life. There's the way of living life where we just see what we see, we move in our normal human flesh, we process things with our own ability and understanding. And then there's the other way of doing life, and that is realizing that there is a God who's orchestrated all of this. That none of us are accidental or incidental to God, and that in the ebb and flow of life, He is always working in the littlest, smallest, most specific details to connect us with people who can help connect us to the story that God has wanted us to be a part of all along. And for all of us today, this is true. Not one person in this building today is off heaven's radar. Not Rachel in a club on Piedmont. Not Chip floating through life, happy as can be, zero concept of God, doing his thing until the bottom drops out. No one, not you, is off of heaven's radar. And the most important thing for us all today is to think about whether or not we're going to see how God is working around us and see how much McKittrick he loves us and open our hearts to what we really need. Chris mentioned our dog, London. I was going to bring her this morning, but she wasn't going to have it. She's like her dad. She's normally not rolling around fully functional like you people are at 6 o'clock in the morning, but God bless you. It helps the economy of the city for you guys to get out early. But she's a golden doodle, and she's a year old. She had her birthday party yesterday. We had a dog birthday party yesterday. That's low right there. When you're getting down to that, you love your wife, and you're committed to your marriage when you're going to a dog birthday party. And wearing a hat. And the dog had on a hat. We all had on hats. And London is amazing. She has this beautiful coat. I was going to bring you a picture of her, but I did bring her into church the other Sunday. And we had to have her shaved down like a lot of these long-haired kind of dogs do after a year. Her hair got all matted up and nasty. And we took her to the kennel to stay for 2 days and asked her to them to shampoo her. And on the way, they called and said, hey, this is the last shampoo. Your dog's got to get shaved. And we're like, oh, okay. We knew that was coming. And we picked her up. I mean, I did not recognize her. I did not know what my dog looked like until that day. After 1 year, I didn't know she looked like that. She really is like a... It's crazy. I can't get into it. But she was all depressed, and I realized that under this beautiful, fluffy golden doodle, she's full-size golden doodle, was this real dog. That under the fluff was stuff. And I'm like, this is us. You know, under our suits, you know, this suit, can I tell you about this suit really fast? I've told you a few things about me. I had a relationship with the president over some common interests that we had, and all of a sudden a meeting got put on, not in the White House, not in the executive offices of the White House, but in the Oval Office. That's a big meeting. And I thought, I don't have an Oval Office suit. I got a wedding suit because I'm a pastor. I have a funeral suit, but that's not going to work. And my thing with the president was that, if I can just be really honest, and I'm sure they're not recording this, was that, you know, I want to make sure he understands that Christians are not, like, clueless. That we're not irrelevant, we're not smart, we're not out of touch with things. He's the coolest president we've ever had in America, and he likes things that are cool. So I said, well, Christians are cool. So another buddy of mine and I were going, and I said, I'm getting a suit. So I went to see Sid Mashburn. I don't know if you know him or not. And I said, I'm going to the White House tomorrow. I need a suit today. Can you get me a suit today? I need it right now. He said, oh, we're going to get you set up. What are you thinking? I said, I need a suit that's cool. And he says, what are you talking about? I said, I'm going to the Oval Office tomorrow, and I don't want to go in there looking like some politician. I want to go in there looking like somebody the president's going to go, oh, okay, you're a pastor? Really? Seriously? Well, that's a nice-looking suit for a pastor. So we got set up the whole thing. You know, are you going to wear socks or no socks? I said, no socks. He said, you cannot not wear socks in the Oval Office. I said, I am not wearing socks. I'm not wearing socks now. I'm not wearing socks then. It may be a curveball. Long story short, we had an amazing meeting. And as we walked into the Oval Office, the president said to my friend and I, he goes, you guys are the best dressed pastors I've ever seen. And there was another friend of mine who was with us, and he is a more not interested in being a good, well-dressed pastor, and he kind of looked more like a pastor. Like, I'm sure that suit fits somebody, not you, but somebody, you know, but that's great. And then the president turned to him and said, and as for you, not so much. And I was like, I mean, it really all played out just like that. I don't remember why I told you that, but it was... Interesting little sidebar. And so as we're moving, you know, down the road in life, we're always thinking, what's the president going to think about my suit? Now, you wouldn't think that way, and you probably wouldn't think a pastor would think that way. But what I understand is what a lot of you understand. People see us before they hear us. And before we sat in that meeting, which was going to be potentially a very important meeting and could have been possibly, I wanted him to know that we're normal. I don't know what you think about pastors, but we're normal. And I think a lot of times we're really thinking about, I've got this meeting, which suit do I wear today? Which outfit do I wear today, ladies? We're thinking about our curb appeal. We're trying to say to the world, I'm good. That's what we tell people all day. How you doing? Fine. How's business? Good. How's your family? Everything's great. We're always trying, I think, to pull a London on people. Full coat. Beautiful. Amazing. Yes. Great. Thank you. But isn't it true that under the fluff, we all got stuff. And God is a God who sees the stuff. And he loves us. just the way we are. And if there was ever a great day in life, it is the day that you knew that you didn't have to come to God with your best suit on. You didn't have to try to put your business in the greatest terms. Got working on a deal. Got some coming through any minute. Got a few things brewing right now. Got some conversations we're having. Partnership might come together. Got a property we're looking at. You know, all that is just code for I'm going under. And then, how you doing? Fine. Good. You sure? Good. Anything I can help you with? Good. You know, we're some of us still playing golf at places we can't afford. We're in offices we can't afford. We have marriages that are close to cratering. I discovered in 2008 when I went through a very hard valley of depression and about 3 months of being incapacitated by an anxiety disorder, which really was just depression. Sounds better being anxiety disorder. Panic attacks, that's the new way of saying I had a nervous breakdown. And in that process, I had to get medical help. And I learned when I did, I was telling people, yeah, I've been on this antidepressant for 6 months. And they're like, oh, I take that. I was like, you do? Oh, yeah, my wife takes that. Oh, my kids take that. I was like, good Lord. Half the people in Atlanta take antidepressants. I mean, lots of people take drugs. Because under the fluff, we got stuff. And what this breakfast is really all about is just acknowledging that. So we all want to tell our best success story, but none of us really want to tell the real story. We want to minimize the losses and amplify the wins. We want to medicate the pains and the hurts. And sometimes it is an antidepressant, but sometimes just a glass of wine helps at the end of a long day. And that helps me sleep a little better at night. And the real story is that we were all, hello, made by and for God. And our souls are not at rest until they find rest in Him. I close by telling you a quick story. Do I have time, Bob? So I grew up in Atlanta, Georgia, and I went to Georgia State University. I took an elective class called geology and geography. We learned about things that I didn't know much about. We got in a little small group project on Mount Rainier. I loved it. Six of us studying the topographical maps of Mount Rainier, which was far away from Atlanta, Georgia. I'm a map freak, so I asked if we could check the maps out and take them home at night, and I did, and I took them to our apartment that we lived in Smyrna, and I put them all over my bedroom floor, and I just geeked out over the topographical maps of Mount Rainier at night. Then I'd roll them up and take them back and give them back to the lab assistant with no one else. But I'd get there early so people wouldn't see me bringing the maps back, and then we'd sit in the lab group, and people would be, I hate this lab group. I hate these maps. I hate Mount Rainier. And I'd be like, I know. And then they'd all leave, and I'd take the maps home again that night, and I'd get them out all on the floor. And a few months later, I talked my parents into letting me take our Toyota Corolla. That was our good family car. I didn't grow up in Buckhead. I grew up in Smyrna. Not Vinings, Smyrna. Real Smyrna. In an apartment. Not a great apartment. Not a post apartment. Just an apartment. And my parents let me take our Toyota Corolla on a six-week driving tour of the National Parks of America. And the day that me and my buddy Johnny Mosier, who was a couple years younger than me, I was only 21, were driving out to Mount Rainier in the state of Washington, I was about to lose my mind because I was an expert on Mount Rainier. I'd made 126 on the test. That's a true story. I hated it. The test was so simple. When it was over, I turned the paper over and wrote on the top, things I know about Mount Rainier that you did not ask me on this test. I wrote small print the whole back. So we got there, 5,000 feet, the highest place you can drive a car, walked out to this little meadow, and I thought, I'm going to blow Johnny Mosier's mind today. I am going to become the smartest person he's ever met. And I thought, I'm going to wait because I got a little timing in me. I'm going to let us take it all in. It was a clear day. You don't get those often at Rainier. You know, it's 14,221 feet, perfect volcanic cone, most snowfall of any place in contiguous states, North America. We're looking at it, and I'm thinking, any minute, countdown to me making a phenomenal presentation. 3, 2, and then something happened I didn't expect. I started sobbing. I mean, bawling. Not like men cry, like women cry. I cried like women cry. You okay with that, ladies? You know what I'm talking about? It starts right here. Guys, you know it. You've seen it, and this gets going right here, and you're like, oh, Lord, you know, this is not going to be good. And then I just start sobbing. Me and another guy in a meadow. He has no idea why I'm sobbing. And we're men, so I'm not looking at him. He's not looking at me. True story. I walked away after 15 minutes of not being able to regain my composure and sat in the car. A few minutes later, he showed up and got in the car. We drove to our campsite, camped, put up camp, ate our meal, and went to bed again and never talked about why I cried. Because we were men. Made perfect sense. Two women had been there. They'd still be taking their families there to this day. They would be going back to that meadow. They would be introducing their kids to each other. They would be having a moment. Guys never spoke of it. That night, the next night, we drove to Oregon. I'll close with this. And it was freezing cold. We'd split up for survival. I was in a tent in the one sleeping bag we had. He was in the car with a blanket. I was laying in that tent in Coos Bay, Oregon. I was a 21-year-old kid who grew up in one of the greatest churches in Atlanta. I knew so much about God, and I really did love him. I was laying there staring at the top of that tent thinking, What was that yesterday? What happened? And I sensed God kind of nudging me in my heart and saying, this is what happened. Yesterday you learned the difference between knowing a lot about something and truly knowing something. You came here knowing a lot about Mount Rainier. He goes, but yesterday you got introduced to Mount Rainier. And it's a big difference. And that was the turning point for my whole life. Because I knew right then and there that I didn't want to live my days on earth with my stuff, just knowing about Jesus. I wanted to be introduced to him. And I wanted to know him, not just know about him. And this is the opportunity for the Rachels of the world and the Chips of the world and the Louis of the world and the Yous of the world to know that you were created by and for Jesus. And that as much as we try, our souls will not find rest until we find our rest in him. And he is in the cracks and crevices today, is he not? And one of those cracks and crevices may be that you're sitting around one of these tables this morning. Because God knew more than anything what was under your fluff. And he needed you to know that he sees you under there, that he loves you under there, that he has all the power that you need under there. He has a story that he's writing for your life. And that story has really just begun. Thank you for letting me come today and be a part of this morning. Bob Day is going to come and give us all an opportunity to think about what God's been saying to us today. Bob, come and share with us.